as a boy, I wrote a song for you. And though we'd never met, I felt as if I knew the aching of your heart and the secret there within. The color of your voice, the feeling of your skin. Along with an undercurrent too, it pushes and it pulls and washes over you, and then it sets you down when you were only passing through. 1,000 miles from home, I wanted a night. Have a window with a view. I don't wanna be alone. I wanted a night with you. Ooh, night with you. Ooh, night with you. Ooh, 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 ooh. My arms around you, and I do what my heart tells me to, but still I knew, yes I knew. Maybe soon I will not think of you. I will not think at all. I will not be blue, and I will disappear, and you will turn into a memory so dear. I call my night with you.
Singer-songwriter Jory Nash has just released his new album. It's entitled The Many Hats of Jory Nash, an album that pays homage to his extensive hat collection. It's a beautifully textured album of folk and folk pop in the classic singer-songwriter tradition, and it features some excellent songs with a wonderfully warm and playful sound, clever lyrical hooks, and excellent musicianship. And after that introduction, it's only fair that we talk to the man himself. Jory Nash is at home in Toronto. How are you doing today, Jory?
I'm doing wonderfully, Jan. I need to hire you as my promo. That was beautiful.
Well, I don't know what it is about a Jory Nash album, but every time I put it on, and we're going to talk a lot about the album in the next half an hour, but every time we put it on, what I notice is there is this immediately wonderful, warm, and playful feel. And I felt the same way about your previous album, certainly Little Pilgrim, the most recent album before The Many Hats of Jory Nash, really felt like that. So I'm really thrilled that we're going to be able to talk in depth about your album today. We just listened to A Night With You, which features Laurie Cullen on backing vocals. I'm going to get you to talk a little bit about that song before we talk a little bit about your music.
That song was written when I was in Vancouver. I was actually doing a songwriter showcase with Lynn Miles and Dave Gunning and Sherry Ulrich, and it was a Tana Slimin from Guelph. We were all there in Vancouver doing a beautiful concert. And the night before, I was sitting in my hotel room feeling very forlorn and lonely and in another city, and I just decided to write a song about somebody who's feeling that way and wishing they had somebody to connect with.
So it's a very beautiful song. I love with this album the fact that you have so many different people involved, and it seems to be a theme in your life that you you're connected with a great many people within the folk music community, not just in Canada, but I think in North America beyond that.
That's right. Well, this particular track has a beautiful backing vocal by Lori Cullen, who is Lori's a friend, but I also admire her artistry tremendously. I think she's one of the most unique vocalists and writers that are out there, and she's been actually singing on just about every record I've had since I started this. And I always, with many artists, I'll bring them into the studio and we'll work on stuff together. With Lori, she prefers me to send her a track in question, and she'll work on these multi-textured counterpoint melodic vocal parts and then send all the files back to us, and we pick and choose and edit it all in. So she sent us dozens and dozens of vocal options, and we carved together a really, what I think is a very unique a vocal part to that song.
I get the impression that you actually like to record your albums in a, fairly quickly, within a sort of a matter of, 1 to 2 weeks, with a lot of people coming into the studio together. And yet you're just talking about actually working with someone who may not be with you. Is that something you only do when you need to? Is that something that you also like to mix in there?
It is. Sending tracks off and going on faith is something I have a great difficulty doing. Because Lori and I have such a history, I know that she's capable and she knows what I like and don't like, and I do trust her musical ideas almost completely without even giving any thought to it. I almost let her have carte blanche when I choose to use her on a song. I do tend to, as you mentioned, record relatively quickly, and I do tend to have lots of people in the studio. Much of this record was done live off the floor, meaning we had a 7-piece band. We played all these songs together live, and then I would overdub in most cases the vocals afterwards. I do that partially because for certain kinds of songs, like the full band ones, you really get a better sound, I think, playing together. There's a more natural sort of vibe. Like, most jazz records are done that way. But there's also a financial component to my records that, even though I spend, the budget's $25,000 to $30,000 for a record, if I were to take twice as much time, that budget would balloon to something beyond what I'd be able to pay. So getting things done relatively quickly is a matter of necessity, and it can work artistically as well, because I do like to use studios, higher-end studios with really amazing microphones and great sort of analog pathways. And your comments about the way the records sound is partly due to the way we record, partly due to who I record with, partly due to how I arrange the tunes, but also the equipment that we use. There's really no replacing high-end analog microphones and tube preamps and that sort of thing. And that's sort of one of the reasons why my records sound the way they do, and I do take pride in that. So I'm glad you noticed.
Now, this is the 8th album that you've done. Has the way you work changed over the years from the early days of Jory Nash?
Yes, it has. I mean, in the very first record, I literally didn't know what I was doing. And I rented a studio that I'd heard of but didn't know. Some of the players, there were some players on that record I didn't know at all, and we all got together, and I actually did more tracking on that one. Some of the tunes were done live, but I really didn't understand the recording process then like I do now. And I've learned that through working with great players, through being in studios. I certainly know what I'm not capable of. I'm not somebody who is interested in engineering a record. I hire people to get the sounds that I want. I know how to arrange a record and produce a record, but the actual engineering, recording, and mixing part, not only am I not good at, but I have no interest in getting good at. So surrounding yourself with people who have skills that are greater than yours at the things that you can't do is also something I've learned to do.
Now, you've been fairly diligent, if we look back over the 8 albums, producing an album every 2 to 3 years. Do you see that as a very important part of your career, to make sure that You know, we'll talk a little later in the interview about what happens next, but that you are also have a plan that not only includes obviously promoting the album that you've just done, but also collecting material, thinking about songs that may appear on a future album?
I prefer to actually do records more frequently if I could. I certainly most of the time have more than enough songs. It's I look at the Beatles. They did a record, you know, sometimes two records a year. I'm not to say I'm the Beatles, but sometimes 2 to 3 years, 3 years certainly feels way too long. But oftentimes it's more a function of the getting the finances, quite frankly, together to make a $25,000 to $30,000 record. I need to often get grants in place and or do a crowdfunding campaign because I certainly don't have that kind of cash at the ready. So many times the tunes are there, and I just need to be able to get it because I don't want to cut corners financially, and meaning I don't get to do artistically what I'd like to do.
So do you?
Ideally, I'd like to do another record in about a year and a half, and the only way that that's likely going to be able to happen is for me to strip down the arrangement and to have it a much more, I've never really done a true acoustic, you know, just a couple of guitars and very little instrumentation on a full record. And I'm thinking that if I can write the songs that would work with, that's what I'm going to do next. And I could conceivably have that out in a year and a half. But a full band, fully arranged record like the one I just put out, I just 2 years minimum to get the finances in order. And then, as you were alluding to, you've got to promote it, you've got to then tour it, and that takes time and energy to make that happen properly.
If we look at songwriting, do you find songwriting easy? My impression is that you don't find it difficult to come up for material that you think would, you know, form the basis of a song you're going to write.
Well, when I was younger, and by younger I mean, you know, I started writing as a teenager and into my early 20s, I was, quite frankly, like a faucet, meaning I could just pick up an instrument, a guitar, piano, and write a song. Now, that doesn't mean it was always a good song. It may have had elements that were interesting, but sometimes quantity over quality was the way I worked when I was younger, simply because I just was always writing. I'm a little bit more exacting in my process now, so that I take more time in the craft of songwriting. So I can be working on 2 or 3 or 4 songs at any time, and they're at various states of finish. I don't write nearly as prolifically, but I can certainly write an album's worth of material every 9 months to a year or so. I don't write as often. What I used to do is write so much that I would be recording a record, and I'd have these new tunes that I thought were better than what I was recording, which can be really distracting when you're making a record. So I actually stop writing when I am making a new record, and I don't start again until the record is done and finished. So I'm just starting the process of writing again.
So what about your lyrical process? Is that completely separate from coming up with the hook for the tune that will go with it?
Well, like most writers actually write music first or music and a lyric together. There are very few writers that I know of who write lyrics first and put them to music. Joni Mitchell is one who does that. And I think it's because it's hard. It's really difficult to write free-form lyrics that don't have the kind of foundation and structure of a melodic line and the time signature of the tempo, almost like the pentameter of a lyric, of a melodic line. I find that hard to take a free-form lyric and put it to music. I find it much easier to have music first and then do lyrics. So I have a lot of musical ideas right now, and then what I want to write about is where I'm taking more time. There are certain subjects that I have possibly exhausted, and I could write another song about aspects of my own love life, but I've done that. And how many times, until I can find a unique way to approach a subject I've already covered, I'm not interested in writing about it. So lyrics for me actually are the one area that take longer than they used to. I writing melodies is I can pick up an instrument and something can come out melodically, but having something that I want to write about, can wrap my head around and craft an interesting narrative, that I take a little more time.
We're going to take a break for something from the album just now. My guest today is Jory Nash. We're talking about his wonderful new album that is entitled The Many Hats of Jory Nash. I'd like to play King in Denial, which features Amanda Walter from Dalla on harmony vocals. Can you tell us a little bit about this song? I think it was the last one you wrote, wasn't it?
It was, and we recorded the record basically in two large swaths of time. The whole band went into the studio, and by a whole band, I mean it was a seven-piece band, and we recorded for about 4 days in August and did all the full band tracks. And then I was going away, and I teach outdoor ed every September, so I basically stopped playing music for 4 weeks, 5 weeks, go into the woods and teach outdoor education, and then we were finishing it up in October. And I knew, going into that second set of sessions, I was missing what I would consider to be an acoustic, sort of a really guitar-based acoustic-style song that was almost a familiar type Jory Nash song from that people who have been with me a while would say, oh, that's a Jory Nash song. That's, you know, at much of this record, I was attempting to do some things that were different, sounds that were a little different, arrangements that were different. But I was cognizant that I needed something that would almost carry like a thread from the last record to the new one. And I was missing that in terms of one song that in my head was a good connector. So for me, fear and panic are great writing motivators. And we had the sessions booked, and I didn't have this tune. So probably about a week before, I sat down in a panic, and it came out very quickly. That song was written probably in an afternoon and evening, both music and lyrics. And it's not surprising that it doesn't actually have a bridge, because I knew to write a bridge, I'd have to take some time away from it, and I might not be ready for the recording session. So that's why it has just verses and bridges, and I'm a big fan of Dalla, both Amanda and Sheila from the group Dalla. They're friends. They're wonderful singers. They've both been on previous records of mine. And I sent the tune to Amanda, and she said, yep, I hear myself singing. And she came down to the studio after we had laid the basic track down and sang a beautiful part.
It's interesting. You also said that King in Denial was one of the names you thought about as perhaps the title for this album. I love the title, The Many Hats of Jory Nash. We'll talk about that in a few moments. But it's interesting you say that, because it's really important to get a good title for an album, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And I find sometimes I'll have a name very clear. I knew years and years ago that for my record Spaz Loves Wheezy, the moment I wrote that song, that was what the record was going to be called. I knew that New Blue Day, that was the title. But most of the time I don't, and it panics me. Like I get very stressed out trying to come up with a name for a record if it's not obviously apparent, because everything feels wrong. And so my original goal was to have the title be a one-word title. I've never actually had a title of a record have one word. Like Inner Visions by Stevie Wonder.
Yeah.
What a great title. I don't have that. So I actually had, A Night With You, there's one word in that song called Undercurrents. And I thought, that's a great title. And then I realized that there is a Bill Evans and Jim Hall record called by the same name, and that they're famous jazz musicians. And although many people aren't fans of jazz music or know jazz music as well, to jazz fans, that would be like calling a record Abbey Road. You just can't do it, right? So I couldn't name it that one, and I couldn't come up with another. I did have one. I was going to maybe call it Bridges, because I like a musical bridge. I like many of the songs on the record have very intricately written bridges. But then I realized if I called the record Bridges, it would be Jory Nash Bridges. And then all I could think of was that terrible Don Johnson TV show, Nash Bridges. So I couldn't have that as a title. So I really panicked, and I put out on Facebook a couple of the titles from the record, one being King in Denial, another one, there were a couple other options, and that was one of them. But most people didn't like it as a title. They liked it as a song title, but not as a record title. And myself, I wasn't too attached to it as an album title. So it was really just for almost in a an attempt to find the right title. That was part of the conduit.
So let's play that song just now. This is Jory Nash with the song entitled King in Denial from his wonderful new album, the many hats of Jory Nash, and you're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
Call him the conductor, 'cause he's always waving. He's been all the way to Kingston and back again. He's a little bit crazy, but he don't need saving, and he won't be waiting for the next best day. Sometimes I think I'm too grounded, and the more I feel, the less I let go. And in a little while, there'll be one more king in denial. Yes, I know. Oh, he can be alive early in the morning, and he can be silent when he drinks too much. Oh, but nevertheless, one for living in the moment, and he never gets fazed by his growing old. Sometimes I think I'm too grounded, the more I feel, the less I let go. And in a little while, there'll be one more king in denial. I know, no. Someone, or you could be no one, just one of the good ones who helps all men. One that don't ask for nothing, makes others feel wanted, and long after you're gone, they'll say that they knew you when. Sometimes I think I'm too grounded, and the more I feel, the less I let go. And in a little while, there'll be one more king in denial. I know, no, no.
That was Jory Nash with The King in Denial from his great new album, The Many Hats of Jory Nash. Jory Nash is our special guest on Folk Roots Radio today. You know, one of the things about talking to you, Jory, is it is a wonderful conversation. I want to steer the conversation now, though, into the title of the album. We were talking about the various titles that you had thought about before you came up with The Many Hats of Jory Nash. Tell us a little bit about your hat collection and why you thought that was the direction to go this time.
Well, I have a hat collection. It is growing. I've just added 3 more hats in the last week, 2 that I bought and 1 beautiful one that was given to me at the end of a concert I did in Toronto recently. So I don't know why I like hats so much. And I certainly recall not wearing them on stage. But for the last 10, 15 years, I don't think I've ever performed without a hat. I like them. I think they're certainly a neat fashion accessory, and they've gotten more elaborate over the years. So I have a large hat collection, maybe about 200 or so, and there are lots in boxes, and they're all in my musical den. They're just in, you know, piles of hats, and it's a little bit obsessive, I think. But when I couldn't come up with a title that was really speaking to me, in the back of my head, Jan, I've always had this idea that if I ever had a greatest hit CD, you know, a collection, a career retrospective, I would call it The Greatest Hats of Jory Nash, a play on the word hits. But the reality is, I don't really have any hits in the conventional sense, so I may never have a collective or a greatest hits collection, so I didn't want that title to go to waste. So I thought, what about calling this one The Many Hats of Jory Nash? And once I made that decision, it was almost like it was entirely supposed to be. And it suddenly became that I had an absolute clear vision of what the record was going to look like, why it was called that, because, again, it is stylistically, even though I'm a proud folk roots musician, I do try to stretch the boundaries of what that means. And there's a lot of different styles within or under the folk umbrella, from gospel to bluegrass to blues to sort of folk, you know, with a more acoustic side to a more indie folk. There's lots of different directions that folk music encompasses. And I explore a lot of them on this record. So it's a bit of a metaphor for the styles included on the record, and it's a direct note and a direct nod to this rather extensive hat collection I have.
You know, one of the things I love about the album, when you're actually looking at the sleeve notes that come with the CD version, is the fact that for each of the songs, you describe what that song would be if it was a hat. And it's actually fun because when you're actually listening to the songs and you're working through the sleeve notes at the same time, it's actually kind of nice to find out that, for instance, the Night With You that we started with first today would be a hockey helmet. And then King in Denial, I got to look and see what King of Denial would be. It would be a Homburg.
It would be a Homburg. A Homburg is a beautiful hat. And there used to be, there was a company in Guelph that made beautiful Homburgs. They're not there anymore. I can't remember the name of the hat maker, but a very famous hat maker. And a Homburg is one of their specials. But one day I'm going to get a Homburg in my collection. It's one of the few classic hats that is missing.
Do you have just a few hats that you wear for your stage shows? I mean, you know, when you have a collection of 200... I assume you must have the favorites that are used for stage shows.
Yes, that's true. There are probably, you know, of those 200, I'd say, like, you know, 50, 60 of them are just straight baseball caps of different, you know, vintages. But I probably have about 15 or so that would be sort of stage worthy. And these range from, you know, I'm a big fan of pork pie hats. It fits my head well. So I think I have about 4 pork pie hats in different colors. I like mini fedoras, so I have a couple of those. I like bowlers, so I have several bowlers. Because not only is the hat important, but the color of the hat is as well. Because that, you know, in terms of accessorizing, I can match it with my tie or my suit or anything like that. So about 15 or so. And when I buy hats now, they tend to be ones with an eye towards the stage.
You know, I can see another career coming out of this down the road. I think it'll be music, and either you'll have your own hat company or maybe some sort of rental business. There has to be something in there. I'd like to go back to the album just now and play a song with some social commentary in it. And I know that social commentary is something you like to weave in to your songs. The song that I've selected to play today is a song entitled Homeless Man. I think that's obviously self-explanatory. But I do want to give you a chance to talk about social commentary and the importance of weaving that into your lyrics, and also this specific song.
There are a lot of writers that I am influenced by for various reasons. From a social commentary perspective, writers like Woody Guthrie and right down through to later stage Bruce Springsteen. These are writers that write about what they see and what they know and what bothers them about society and what they think can be improved. And I think that's important. I think as a writer, we have a chance to be on a soapbox that others don't. And given that opportunity, you want to be able to present your thoughts in a cogent and hopefully inspiring way, but without being preachy and pushy. I live in Toronto. I live downtown Toronto, where there are a lot of homeless shelters in my neighborhood. And the song Homeless Man was written our previous buffoon of a mayor, Rob Ford, was still in office, and Rob Ford paid almost no attention to the homeless problem in Toronto. You know, he took credit, or tried to take credit, for things that were going right in the city that he had nothing to do with, and paid no attention to things that he could have spent time and energy and certainly finances on to improve the situations of. And homelessness is one of those, in my opinion, issues that he completely ignored. And so that was just, I see a lot of it in my neighborhood, and I just wanted to write something. I tend to write a lot from first-person narrative, even if it's not me that is the narrator. I take the the role of that, so it's sung in the first person, even though it's not me, Jory Nash, telling the story, a personal story. It's that's just a technique that feels comfortable to me, and so that's what I did in this case. I basically just wrote about what I see in my neighborhood on a typical daily basis.
Well, it's a great
tried to attach a character, a human specific character to that narrator.
Well, it's a great song, and I certainly hope that people, you know, working on campaigns to obviously to target this blight on our society might think of this song as a song that could be used to support something like that. We're going to play that just now. This is Jory Nash with a song entitled Homeless Man from his great new album, The Many Hats of Jory Nash.
The liquor store, that's where I get fueled up and then beg for more. Got no luck, got no plan, down and out, homeless. Someone stole my shoes down at the Sally Inn. I swear I'll get cleaned up when I can. And one of these days, I think I'm gonna blow, and it could be soon, but I just don't know.
That was Homeless Man by Jory Nash from the new album, The Many Hats of Jory Nash. He is our guest on Folk Roots Radio today. We're talking about some of the tracks from the album. Now, let's get back to the album. Tell us a little bit about the people that played on the album, because when you actually read through the sleeve notes, you have some heavy hitters on there as far as musicians that are well known on the Canadian music scene.
I'm really glad you asked that, because it's really important to... for listeners, and when you play my record, you see my name, and you say that was Jory Nash playing this, and I appreciate that. But a record is the sum of all the people who play on it, and there are very few solo guitar pieces on this record. There's a lot of great players on it. And I think about that great movie about Standing in the Shadows of Motown, which is all about the people who play on the beautiful records from the Motown years. You know, and they were paid kind of union wage, and nobody knew who they were. Their names weren't even on the record, but they were so critical to the sound. So the people who play on my records are really important, and I really am grateful that they do. I tend to have friends play. I rarely hire people that I don't know, because making a recording for me is such a personal and in some ways difficult process. I want to be surrounded by people who know me and can bring out the best in me. And so most of the players are friends that I've met through music, on some going even well before that. But the key, the band in the record is a 7-piece group, including myself. I had Mark Mariash on drums, and I've worked with Mark before. Many of the same people who are on Little Pilgrim, quite frankly, the record before, are on the same band. Maury LaFoy, who has been I've played bass with him ever since I first heard him on a Sarah Harmer record and said, I have to find out who this is. And we've been friends ever since. David Matheson is on piano. Robbie Grunwald is on organ. And Robbie's new to playing with me, except I was Robbie's counselor at summer camp when Robbie was like 12 years old. So I've known Robbie a very long time and known him, you know, he's been playing with Jill Barber for a while. So I've been looking for a way to incorporate him into the record, into the recording. There's also Brian McMillan is on guitar, and I've played with Brian many times, and we have a couple of musical projects together, and Jason Fowler as well is the other guitar player. And Jason is the only person who's been on every single one of my 8 records besides me. And then there are just an amazing number of guests, from Chris Kuhl on banjo to Kevin Fox on cello, to Burke Carroll on pedal steel, to all the vocalists like Lori Cullen and Michelle Willis and Kate Rogers and Amanda Walther and Oh Susanna. And the record was made with my good friend Chris Stringer, who is a musician and a producer of records. He produced, he's done Timber Tambor, he's done Obijou, he's done New Country Rehab, and we've made 6 records together, either with Chris Engineering or Chris Engineering and co-producing.
And that must feel good when you have to all those people that you can bring together. You mentioned that a lot of these people are people that also played with you on Little Pilgrim. I mean, it must That's feel right. a bit like family.
It is. They're friends and family, and it's, yes, I'm very blessed to have such talented but also really devoted friends who are fantastic musicians.
I'd like to talk about a duet now, Jory, because it's a song that you sing with Michelle Willis. I think she also plays piano on this. It's entitled I Wake Up to Face Another Day. Very beautiful song, and I think it's a little bit of a departure from what you've done in the past, isn't it?
It certainly is. I have long tried to write a male-female duet, and not just a song where both a male and a female sing. I've done that before, but actually a song where the narrator, there's 2 narrators, so it's literally like one of those classic 70s duets, like a You Don't Bring Me Flowers kind of thing, or I just love that, or Don't Go Breaking My Heart, Kiki D and Elton John. Now it's a little bit sadder than I think that song in terms of theme and also the vibe of the song, but that was my goal, was to write one where both, whoever's singing the male and female parts, it's not just a harmony, but they each are taking verses and singing from their perspective. And I have tried writing those before and have failed, in my opinion, as the end result is just not good enough to record. This one was the first one where I thought, this is what I've been trying to do. And then the next step was, who do I want to sing this with? And Michelle Willis is somebody I met last year, but only about a year ago. A group of friends of mine, musical friends, we do every so often a show called Smooth Sweet Sounds of the 70s. It's exactly what it sounds like. We get together and at Hughes Room in Toronto and play smooth and cheesy and great sort of 70s soft rock. And we put our own spin on it, but it's a little bit of homage to that sort of sound and era. And we added Michelle as somebody last year to the show, and she took on keyboard, she took some of like the string parts and even kind of the horn parts and some piano parts. And she's a great, her singing just knocked me out, and so did her piano playing. And So when I wrote this song, I thought, first I thought she'd be perfect to play the song. That was how I thought first. And then I realized, why don't I get her to sing it too? And it was amazing. She has I can't really describe her accurately because she's a very textured player. She's got soul to her in the way that like Stevie Wonder is soulful, yet she's got a Carole King-esque kind of vibe to her as well. And she has a lower register female voice, which is very unusual, but she's a terrific singer. It's a wonder, and I was really pleased at how our voices blended, which you never can tell until you actually sing together. And it's one of the more striking tunes on the record. And then we got Kevin Fox to come in and just play a very haunting cello part. And that's it. It's just piano and cello and Michelle and I singing.
It's certainly a great song. Let's play that just now. This is Jory Nash in a duet with Michelle Willis and I Wake Up to Face Another Day from the great new Jory Nash album, The Many Hats of Jory Nash. You're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
The dream comes fast and with growing frequency. You and I, right back at the start, but you won't speak to me. And then I wake up to face another day. I wake up to face another day. There was me and you and nobody else. Now it's just me.
You lurk hiding in the dark and mystery. It's a story of little parts of our history. When you wake up to face another day, you wake up to face another day. There was you and me and nobody else. Now it's just you.
All around this shady town, crooks and sharks and thieves. If I look across, I'll never see what you see. The dream comes fast and it ought to have shaken me. So much to ask, but questions that don't come easily. And then I wake up to face another day. I wake up to face another day. I was dreaming of you and nobody else, but now it's just me.
That was Jory Nash with Michelle Willis in a song entitled I Wake Up to Face Another Day from the new album, The Many Hats of Jory Nash. Jory Nash is our special guest today. We've been talking about the new album, which I think is available through your website at jorynash.com and on iTunes. Is that right, Jory?
That is correct, Jen. Yes, it is. Both the download and the CD can be ordered directly from my website, jorynash.com, and the download only is on iTunes. People should know that because I really value I find CDs important as an artistic statement. A whole album concept means a lot to me, and I value the fact that people still buy CDs in dwindling numbers. Yes, but I would like to see the CD survive as a medium. So I always put a bonus track or two that is only available on the CD. You can't get the bonus track on the download. Just as almost like a reward for people who are still buying the hard copy CDs.
I do want to actually mention the packaging of the CD, because I am somebody, I get sent a lot of CDs these days, but I also love to still buy them. And I like to see good packaging. And I got to say, the packaging of this CD is awesome. I love the lyric booklet and the sleeve notes that come with it. I also should put a plug in for A Man Called Rycraft, because Michael Rycraft has outdone himself on this cover.
Yeah, he's I've worked with Michael probably 6 out of the 8 records I've made, and I think, you know, I had the basic idea, and then he took it and basically just, you know, metaphorically ran with it and just took it to another place. And it was a joint, the whole package was really a joint effort between me, Michael Rycraft, and Jen Squires, the photographer. She also did an amazing, I mean, we had to take 200-300 pictures to get all the options that Michael would then sort through for the cover. And she edited them all and took days to do it, and did a wonderful job. So both of them deserve tons and tons of credit.
It's certainly a lovely CD, and I completely agree with everything you said about actually buying the album. And I do want to mention that, again, if you go to Jory's website and buy the album, you'll actually get the download with the album as well, which actually I think that is really nice for people.
Cool, yeah. Well, you know, artists need to value, make their fans feel valued, because we truly do appreciate the fact that we have fans. And so that's really, that's important.
So let's talk about the live experience. You will play solo. You also play with a band. You mentioned that this is a band album. Is it going to be launched through the various CD release concerts? Are they going to be band shows? Are they going to be solo shows?
I can't afford to take a band on the road with me. It doesn't work financially. These are people, the players are just, the money that they need to be paid for the value of their services, I couldn't generate at most concerts I do. So even though it is a band record, there are still some tracks which are very stripped down, and certainly almost all the tracks work well in a solo or maybe a duo format. But the majority of shows I will be doing on this tour will be solo. But there are a couple of instances where I'll have a band with me. I just did one in Toronto this past weekend that I had Brian McMillan playing with me. And at the end of May in Toronto at Hughes Room, I think it's Saturday, May 30th, I will be doing a very, very rare full band show. By full band, I mean the seven-piece band from this record, plus many of the guests will be there. And it's one night where I won't make any money as the artist, but it will be a musical experience for me as well as hopefully the audience that I don't get to do very often. So that's a kind of a one-off, but one that I hope that people will come out for. So May 30th at Hughes Room to see a very rare large band show. I don't know if there's enough room on the stage for what I'd like to do that night.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. If you want to check out the shows that Jory is doing in the coming months in relation to the release of this new album, head to his website, which again, as I mentioned before, is jorynash.com. Jory, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you today. We've got time for just one more song, and actually we're going to go to the beginning of the album because we're actually going to finish with the first song, which is Ain't Coming Home. Can you tell us about that song?
Yeah, I originally wrote it on the banjo, and I thought it was going to be a song written for two banjos. That was what I in my head. But when I started playing it a bit live, either solo banjo, or I did a couple shows with a great player by the name of Rosalind Dennett, who used to be an Oh My Darling, and had the two banjos going, and it was just a little too much banjo. And so I rearranged it so where I played it on guitar, and then we added some of the people in the band on it, and it just took on a much better arrangement. And I'm a big believer that a record has to be attention-grabbing, much like, you know, a cover of a book or a cover of a record has to attract attention. And it doesn't mean it has to be an upbeat tune to a record, but the first song on a record really is critical in setting a tone. And I thought there was no other song in this collection that made sense to start the record off. And I'm really happy with that decision.
Well, it's a great song and a perfect way to finish today. This is Jory Nash with Ain't Coming Home from the great new album, The Many Hats of Jory Nash. Jory, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you today.
Such great questions. I really, really appreciate this conversation, Jen.
It's been great having you with us. Again, Jory Nash, Ain't Coming Home. We'll talk to you next time, Jory.
Thank you so much.
Driving away at the speed of the sound of the road. I'm leaving this way 'cause I don't wanna stay here alone. You can tell all my friends that I ain't coming home. Say what you want, but I ain't coming home. Go calling the law for to break down the door. Station to station, ain't no revelation at all. Man, I need a vacation, a new destination, or a port of call. Tell all my friends that I ain't coming home. Say what you want, but I ain't coming home. Go calling law for to break down the door. You can hide from yourself just as sure as you're born. But if you're somebody else and you've never been warned that the world don't change, and the road it goes on and on. Some will believe you and some will be deceived, and this I know. And I'm shedding some skin 'cause I need to again just let it go. Tell all my friends that I ain't coming home. Say what you want, but I ain't